This is your extended news at noon. I'm Tracy Morgan. So what we're going to do today for our extended news at noon interview is re-air an interview that I did with the Butler Health System about mental health and social distancing. Now, this came from a different talk show that we do here at the station. It's called Let's Talk. So this interview has already aired another day, another time, but we wanted to re-air it now. This is Ruth Ann Durso. She is the clinical supervisor with behavioral health with the Butler Health System. So we joined the conversation, of course, when I welcome her into the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tracy. Glad to be here.
Is this something that you have seen before? I mean, none of us really lived through a pandemic before. So in your professional viewpoint, have you seen this before?
No, this is really unprecedented. The difficulty of social distancing, just as human beings, we're social creatures. We really look to have interaction, and that's often how we entertain ourselves. It's how we support each other, is through our families, our friends, organizations we belong to. So having to social distance really is a hit to what we do naturally and organically. And so it's very difficult for us to switch that component. It's very difficult for people. It feels like such a large loss to people because it's impacting so many areas of their life. You know, social distancing, it doesn't matter what we're talking about, what time of year, what's going on, social distancing is going to impact how we're living our daily lives. So there's no way not to feel that. And, you know, again, if you are thinking about social distancing impacts how you buy your groceries, if you get your yearly physical at your doctor's office, if you're trying to get the cable guy to come fix your cable, there's nothing it does not impact.
When you say the word loss, I always think that we can grieve a lot of loss in life alongside those who have passed away. And that's a whole different conversation in grieving and loss, but I will ask you this. It feels like that we can't even grieve any kind of loss. And again, I'm not just talking about people who passed away. I'm just talking about maybe the loss of not spending the holidays with somebody, or the loss of somebody not coming home to visit you, or just a lot of loss in your daily life. It just feels like it's an entire year that we can't get through one problem without another five problems on top of the one. And so how do we handle that?
Right. And so you're absolutely right. One of the things that happens when we're grieving is grief work kind of happens after the loss has occurred. So because we're in it and we don't necessarily have a finite end date, like I can't say to you, I know I just have to make it two more weeks. It might be three more months. I don't know. So that element of the unknown and feeling like there may not be close light at the end of the tunnel makes that grief work even harder, because to even begin to process what has happened, what it has meant, how it has impacted my life, my family, I can't even begin to wrap my head around all that because I'm still in it. I don't even know what the next few weeks may hold. So it's very difficult for us to be able to do that grief work. You know, we're trying to make sense of it. You know, we look at bigger picture. You know, this is a temporary situation, even though it's a longer term temporary situation than what we're used to. You know, it is temporary. Some of the sacrifices I make now are for the good long term. You know, again, like if I'm not going to have Thanksgiving with my family this year, it's so that we can have many more in the future, and I'm protecting them. So, you know, we're trying to find meaning in it. We're trying to find the coping skills. We're trying to find the way to navigate all this difficulty. But to actually be able to do the true grief work and kind of make peace with it, we're still so far in, it's really hard to do that.
Ruth Ann, I'm tired. I mean, have you heard that endlessly? I'm tired, I'm exhausted, and with no end in sight, as you're
right.
Saying, there's no anticipation of when this will end.
Right. And that is what happens, is that fatigue. So, you know, you hear on the news people talking about, like, COVID fatigue, where people are tired of hearing about the virus. They're tired of dealing with the virus. They're tired of the impact of the virus. But not only that, physically they're tired because it takes so much energy to cope. And then if I'm somebody who's wired kind of anxious or depressed, I may be coping with a lot more of emotional pieces attached to that, which is taking a lot of energy from me. So I really am physically tired. I'm physically tired. I'm emotionally tired. My coping skills are wearing thin. I am worn out on every level in every way. And people have very limited ways to replenish themselves, again, because we often are replenished through our social connections.
On top of all of that, then you have the holidays. And we're talking Thanksgiving. We're talking about December holidays for various folks. Then you have New Year's, and that always was a celebration. And then if we were talking briefly with Dr. Well, I shouldn't say briefly. We talked extensively with Dr. Rottinghouse and Dr. Love the other day, and we briefly talked about vaccines. But if we're talking about vaccines that may possibly get to the general public months from now, do we throw Easter into that, you know, into mm-hmm. that realm of holidays? So we're talking an extended amount of period with holidays wrapping in here that would typically involve gathering with people. So your opinion on the holidays and how this is making it even tougher on people this year.
Right. So, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, those are the highlight of the year for many people. That is a very family-rich time. That is a time of, giving and spirituality. It's a very special time of year. So for people to think about giving that up or to be asked to give that up, it's very difficult for them. That's a heavy weight on them. And for some people, they may say, well, that's too big of an ask. I'm not sure that I can do that. I'm willing to do that. Other ones, it may be easier for them. But it's a very difficult time. It's kind of like with everything we've already been through, everything that folks have already experienced, and now you're going to take the holidays too. Where does it end?
Right. Ruth Ann Durso with us. She's the clinical supervisor for behavioral health with the Butler Health System, a clinician for over 25 years, and we're talking about mental health and social distancing today. And I want to move on to the signs of depression, anxiety. What does this look like, Ruth Ann? Because I'm just like everyone else, have gone through the gamut of frustrating days and anger some days and sadness some days and feeling good on other days. And then we're back to the anger the next day, you know, so it's a cycle. And then even on the good days, there are days where I think I don't really want to go get the pumpkin for Halloween. I'm not sure if we want to get the Christmas tree, you know, but we will. You know, it's what's this look like when we're going through depression and anxiety?
So at this period of time, we're all going to be experiencing certain symptoms of feeling depressed and having anxiousness. That doesn't necessarily mean that what we're experiencing is rising to that clinical definition, because, like I said, we're all going to be feeling some sort of way right now in this very difficult time. So part of what we'd be looking at and wanting to pay attention to is functionality. You gave the examples. I don't know if I want to go get the pumpkin. I don't know if I want to set up the Christmas tree. Everybody's going to have those thoughts. For the folks that are starting to develop a more serious depressive situation, they may not go get the Christmas tree. They may find it really hard to get out of bed, to do typical things they would normally do, as far as like showering, making their meals, doing their laundry. So you really kind of may see that decrease in functionality. They will no longer want to participate in things that they may have looked forward to participating to, even though I know this year nobody's participating in the things that we normally do the way that we did. But you see a lot of people trying to make the best of a bad situation. Folks that are really struggling with the depressive symptoms may find that really difficult to do. They just are shut down. They're having a lot of trouble with sleeping. They may find either they're eating a lot more, they're eating a lot less. They may feel very foggy mentally. They may feel like their memory's just not clicking like it normally does. And on the anxious side, you may find that people just don't want to leave the house. They're afraid to go outside. They're afraid to go to the store. They may be feeling feelings of panic and being overwhelmed. Those are things that we want to talk to a doctor about or a mental health professional to kind of gauge that. Because, like I said, on that continuum, we're all going to be feeling some depression and anxiety in this time. But as those symptoms become more severe and are interfering more with that daily life, then we want to begin to have conversations about if we need some type of intervention or if we need to be paying a little bit more attention to those feelings that I'm experiencing. Because if I'm not able to address those now, after the pandemic is over and we start to, you know, come out of this situation, the depression and anxiety may still linger if I have developed a clinical case, because those are then about brain chemistry and brain changes, and not just strictly about my situation anymore.
Would you say that feeling depressed is different than having clinical depression?
Yes. Yes. So, you know, all of us are going to have sad days in life. Certainly during the pandemic, but in general, we can have a sad day. We get bad news. We hear about a friend or family member that's having a rough time that's making us sad. Or maybe we just kind of said, gee, I'm feeling sad. I'm not sure why. A little bit of a blue day. I don't know why today I'm feeling a little bit anxious. I'm going to be on the radio today, and that's making me anxious. We all have those feelings. When people actually have a diagnosis of depression or anxiety, those symptoms are longer standing. I may feel depressed every day for an extended period of time. I may have symptoms of anxiety every day, again, for an extended period of time. So all of us will feel those ups and downs. Whenever you start to get into a diagnosis, you're seeing folks that are having longer-term symptomology and to a higher level. And again, we're always looking at that functionality. How much is this interfering with my daily life? If I woke up a little sad today, I still came to work. Somebody that has clinical depression, they may not be able to get up and go to work. We're always looking at that functionality.
So it's always important to talk to your doctor. And it was interesting. I think this whole year is surreal in many ways, but I ended up at my PCP's office, just a regular visit, you know, and they ask the mental health questions before you really get started. And it was interesting to answer those this year when they say you're feeling down, you're feeling sad. And I said to the nurse, I said, I know why you're asking. I know why you have to ask. And I understand. But that's a loaded question. You know, and we both kind of chuckled because we're like, you know, I want to say yes, you know, but I'm OK, generally speaking. But today may not be a good day. So I think it's OK to be able to say those things. But talk to your doctor if you feel that, you know, you are in danger, because we want you to reach out. And we'll talk about the services that you have with the Butler Health System. But let me ask you a couple of different questions.
Sure.
One, I want to go to the realm of social media, because I think when people are feeling this anger and frustration and blame and sadness, they turn toward social media as an outlet. Is that a healthy thing or not? Because I know social media can be used for good, but also you can see a lot of criticism and dissension on social media, which may not be the healthiest place to be if you're not feeling well. So what's your thought on social media during this time, or us turning to it for an emotional fill-up?
So, you know, again, it is kind of that double-edged sword, and I've always said in working with folks, we find what we're looking for. So, you know, as I said earlier, socializing in our families and our friends are a way that we have historically coped. It's the way we entertain ourselves. It's the way that we feel connected. It's a very big part of being a human being. So when you have social distancing, technology becomes the main way that we can socialize now. And so social media is such a opportunity for many people to stay connected, stay in contact, keep up on recent events, and feel like they're still participating in life and in their family's lives. So it can be a very positive, powerful thing. Now, going back to my statement that I find what I look for, you know, if I'm using social media, I have to be very aware of what it is that I'm looking for. Am I looking to be connected? Am I looking for something that is uplifting? Am I trying to help myself get through a difficult day? Or am I looking for something to feed my frustration and my anger? Because sometimes when we're angry, we do want to have that choir to say to us, you're right. You're absolutely right. That was unfair. It was unjust. It was ridiculousness. And it makes us feel validated. And validation is very important when we're trying to cope with our emotions. And so, you know, just like everything, too much could be a problem.
Yeah.
if all I'm hitting are kind of the validation responses or websites that are fueling my anger and my frustration, at some point that's going to become, you know, counterindicative. It's really not going to help me. It's actually going to make me feel worse in the long run. It will feel good, quick payoff, but long run feel much worse. So when I'm working with my clients, I am talking to them about being aware of what social media sites they're hitting, who they're talking to. There's some people right now they may need to not have on their news feed right now. That doesn't mean you don't like them. It doesn't mean you're not friends. It just means right now you need to limit some of that stuff. So I think people do need to ask themselves a little bit, like, what's this giving to me? What am I looking for? How is this helping? How is it hurting?
It's just interesting to hear you talk, and I'm glad you brought up your points, because from my vantage point, it is a form of communication. But I always question, is it true communication if we're just posting some words and letting it go? Because, well, we communicate 80-90% through nonverbal communication, body language, vocal delivery, and that's all included. So is that helping us process? But when you're saying you're still talking to clients, you're still talking, right? I mean, is it recommended that you reach out to talk with someone?
Absolutely, and it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that, you know, we don't have a lot of research about what happens to people in a pandemic, because we've never been in a pandemic before. But as we've been relying much more on technology for our socializing, one of the things that is being shown is that technology that allows you to have, voice interaction is much more beneficial than only the written word.
Yeah, because you can hear inflection, you can hear tone. I mean, it's a whole different conversation that you and I can have, but there's a lot that goes into communication alongside the written word. I'm not saying that's not a positive. It's just there's so much that goes into communication that the written word is just a piece of that. You know, we only have about 10 minutes left with you, Ruth Ann, so I want to make sure that we get to the services that you offer. Ruth Ann Dursa with the Butler Health System talking about mental health and social distancing. And you know what? Let me ask you one more. I you know me. I always have one more question, right? I can keep you here all day. This COVID fatigue that you're talking about, before we get into the services that you offer, if we're feeling this COVID fatigue, can this lead to the disbelief of the information that's out there by health professionals, doctors, and communicators?
Absolutely. Because part of what happens is that I'm inundated and I'm overwhelmed and I'm tired of hearing it, and so I will begin to deny it. You know, my specialty is actually drug and alcohol. That's where I've spent the majority of my time in my career, is working with addictions. And, you know, when you talk about drug and alcohol issues, you often do hear that idea of, well, they're in the denial. And what we have to remember is that denial serves a purpose. Denial actually plays a role in protecting us from information and realities that are too dangerous, too threatening, just too overwhelming in general. Now, what happens, or what's supposed to happen, just like somebody that's newly diagnosed with cancer, they'll often tell you, my first thought was the doctor misread the information, it was really meant for another patient. We work past it as our mind wraps around that reality, and then we kind of get down to the nuts and bolts of what we got to do. Denial can become maladaptive when I can't move past it, when I stay there. But, you know, denial is actually a coping skill. And so as people are feeling inundated and overwhelmed, it's so easy to go there because in some ways it's your mind almost trying to find respite.
Let's talk about the help that you give. What is available through the Butler Health System, and specifically the Behavioral Health Department of the Butler Health System?
Yeah. So right now, all the services at the hospital are open. Obviously, the inpatient units are up and running. That includes the adult psychiatric unit, the geriatric psychiatric unit, and the drug and alcohol unit. On the outpatient side, which is where most people would be contacting for help and support with some of the symptoms they may be feeling, Family Services is our arm of the hospital that provides mental health services, and they are able to provide virtual meetings and appointments as well as in person, whatever the client is comfortable with and is easier for them to be able to respond to. Also, the drug and alcohol department is also able to do virtual and in-person appointments and meetings. So, you know, we can do whatever works for the client.
Are you seeing an increase in alcohol use, drug use, and or suicides?
I don't have any suicide statistics. Obviously, we are seeing a lot more people identify depression and anxiety as they go through this. As far as drug and alcohol goes, I'm hearing reports that there are increase in the use of alcohol and recreational drugs as a coping skill. Because I see addictions, I can't say that I'm seeing an increase with people using drugs and alcohol because that clientele would already have a high threshold of use. But from what I am seeing anecdotally through reports and different articles, it does seem that we are clicking on all those cylinders, that it is definitely increasing. I would not be surprised that the suicidal numbers would be up, but I don't actually know that for a fact.
Then let's go back to the help that is available when you say that we can contact you. I know a lot of times for a lot of people, making that first phone call, or as they say in self-help groups, making that walk across the parking lot is the longest walk that you take. When they have not yet reached out, what would you tell them right now, especially in this time of a pandemic? Because a lot of people don't think it's okay to get help, which it is okay to reach out and get help.
Yeah. You know, what I want to remind people is that, you know, it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to ask if you're not sure if you need help, that you just want to check something out. You know, we're human beings, and everybody struggles from time to time, and this pandemic has put strain on every person in a way that has never been experienced before in our lifetime. And so I would certainly find it normal that people might have questions, have doubts, feel some sort of way. And just because you want to talk something through doesn't mean that you have a psychiatric diagnosis. You know, it's okay to ask for help. It doesn't mean that you're weak. It doesn't mean that you're ill. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means that you wanted to talk something through, that you wanted to process it to help wrap your head around what you're experiencing, which, again, is unprecedented for every human being walking the earth right now, right? The other thing to keep in mind, you know, there are formal services that people can check out here at the health system, or people can go to their PCP and start that conversation. And again, PCPs are trying to start those conversations themselves just to make sure people know that there's support and assessment available. But there's also a crisis line here in Butler through CCR that if somebody really wants to talk, they're scared, they don't know what's going on, they can call that crisis line through CCR. There's also a warm line through the Mental Health Association that runs 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And it's really just a support line that if people are having a rough time, they can talk. So there's lots of opportunities for people who maybe just need some support, who want more assessment, and for people who maybe need some treatment or some intervention. Those services are still available. We will meet the client where they're at. We will do whatever we can to meet that need and to help support them through this difficult time.
And I'll say to folks who are listening, it's okay to not know how to process. When I had to figure out how to process through things as an adult, it was just a whole different scenario for me. But it's so beneficial, isn't it, Ruth Ann, to go through that kind of communication and I say processing, not to use the word twice, but when you process some issues that are challenging to you, there is another side to that stress and that pain.
Absolutely. You know, processing is talking, and it really is about kind of wrapping your head around whatever it is that you're going through. And sometimes it's not even what the other person's going to say to you that is the impact piece. Sometimes it's just saying things out loud. It's being able to take the thought from the beginning to the end. And then as you wrap up that conversation, people often feel like they have much more direction on what they want to do, what they need to do. And sometimes they feel like they've just also been able to get some stuff off their chest, just to get some of those thoughts and feelings out to make way for new thoughts and feelings. And so, you know, really every conversation we have, whether we're making a business decision, whether we're making a personal decision, a family decision, we're processing. You know, for some people, it's just a little bit more uncomfortable if they're talking to somebody in the mental health field because they think it has some other meanings. But that's really how we get through life. We talk things through. We make sense of it. And then we decide our path. And that is what processing is all about.
Ruth Ann, we are running out of time. Just about 3 or 4 minutes left with you. So let me ask you about how you're handling the appointments. Are you meeting with people in person, or are you using telehealth? Or can the patient or client decide which they would prefer?
We are offering both on the mental health and the drug and alcohol side, and the patient can decide on what level they're more comfortable with. We have some virtual group modalities. We have individual modalities. And again, we also have those modalities in person as well. So whatever the patient is comfortable with, we will accommodate.
And right now, telehealth, if folks have not reached out in that way, can be very convenient, can it? Not only convenient, but it can provide a safe place for somebody going into this for the very first time, where maybe they would feel uncomfortable going into your office.
Absolutely. It certainly does provide a certain amount of privacy and a way to kind of put your toe in the water, if you will. The other thing that the virtual sessions has offered to folks is sometimes we have people out of county that are actually contacting us for services because the service provider in their area may have been shut down or not have access to some of the technological needs in order to provide some of the virtual options. And so we actually have some folks that are really telecommuting to get services right now because they have limited options in their area. And we're happy to support that and then kick them back to their area once things open up and lighten up.
Let me give a few phone numbers for folks. So if you want to grab that pencil or pen, or you're typing into your phone, into your notes section, that's fine. But here are a couple of numbers if you would like the services. So the first couple are the same, where it's 724-284. Okay, they start that way. 724-284. For Family Services Mental Health, the last four numbers are 4894. For the Butler Health System Regional Recovery, 4759. Couple of more numbers. You got the warm line, which is an 800 number, 292-3866. The crisis line is 1-844-427-4747. Again, 1-844-427-4747. Ruth Ann Durso, the clinical supervisor for behavioral health, in our last minute. Any final thoughts today, Ruth Ann?
You know, again, I just, again, remind people that we are in an unprecedented time and we're all doing the best that we can. And that's okay. That's all we got. It's okay.
Ruth Ann Durso, again, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time talking about mental health and social distancing.
Thank you so much for having me, Tracy, and happy holidays.
And thank you again, folks, for joining us for this segment. This is actually our extended news at noon, but this has been a rebroadcast of an interview that I did from another talk show that we do here at the station, Let's Talk. So this is a rebroadcast of that segment. That segment aired last week, but we just wanted to have that conversation aired again because we think it's such an important conversation to have. Thank you so much for joining us today for your extended news at noon.